and welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. Ross, this is our third episode in 6 days. How hot are the flaming hot takes going to be coming out here 2 days before kickoff?
I'm not sure we have that many flaming hot takes left to give. This is sort of a breakdown of an upcoming game where NDSU is a pretty heavy favorite, so I'm not convinced like where the super hot takes would come from.
Well, we'll figure it out here as the podcast goes along. As Ross said, this is going to be our Charleston Southern preview podcast. So go a little bit into the injury report. We will preview Charleston Southern, and then Ross has an interview with Mr. Craig Haley from Stats FCS, one of the best FCS minds in all the country. So, Ross, let's start things off here with the injury report. Is there anything new to talk about since we last talked on Tuesday?
Nothing really new. I know that Ben Ellison, which was the main concern of Chris Kleiman, they were trying to get him reps yesterday, and depending on how those practice reps in 11-on-11 went, that was going to determine on his availability for the game. As Kleiman mentioned, at this point, you know, Ben is still a third-string player, so it's not necessarily a huge deal. But a guy that you and I both felt like the staff was really high on, so somebody that at least would have been interesting to see in his first full game in a Bison uniform. I mean, the guy that redshirted last year, extremely highly gifted player, a guy that said no to the Big Ten to come be a Bison. So that's a player that I think was going to be or potentially could be fun to watch. There were rumors kind of floating around about a potential angle redshirt pulling because of a RJ Rzendowski hamstring issue, and that appears to be unfounded. I mean, he's a full go. No comments from the coaching staff whatsoever on Rzendowski, and no comments pertaining to any sort of redshirt pulling. And then as we announced on Tuesday, Austin Kuhner's not going to be available for this game or for Eastern Washington. So that's an academic issue. That's not at all an injury issue. So he should be very fresh for the game against Iowa.
Well, good deal there. I should also have this as my coming out here that I will be in Fargo 48 to 60 hours from now, and I will be covering the game for the first time since I've started the Bison Report here, so Ross and I will be out at the Fargo Dome. Ross, if you could have one tip for me as I'm about to take in my first NDSU game, what advice would you have for me?
Well, just be ready. I mean, I know you've been in some Big Ten stadiums, but those are giant 60, 70, 80,000 seat cathedrals, and most of them are open air. This is just 20,000 rabid human beings making as much noise as possible with a roof on top. So it's striking, certainly, for the first time you've ever been in there. And then it's going to be a real emotional day, and we'll get to that later. But, I mean, there's going to be a video package. NDSU's got brand-new video boards that we'll talk about, and there's going to be a conference championship banner being raised and a national championship banner being raised. Just be ready. But I'm excited to tag team this thing for the first time ever. I'll be down on the field. You'll be up in the booth. We'll have this Charleston Southern game covered from top to bottom. So it's exciting for fans of the Bison Report to have Ross and Ryan in the same place at the same time for the second time ever, basically.
No kidding. Hey, Ross, you want to give fans a reminder of, obviously, 48 hours from now, it'll be game day for fans who are maybe a little bit rusty on what time lots open, everything with it will be going on with the national championship banners. You want to give fans a rundown of what to expect and what time to arrive and where?
Yeah, I mean, the standard way that they do things as far as tailgating is concerned is 5 hours before the game. So the tailgating lots should open up at 1:30. Get in line for the public lots as early as you can, I guess. Those are generally about $5 a spot. I would assume that they're the same. You buy as many spots as you need to set up your particular territory. And then I would say certainly get into the stadium at least 15 minutes early. As I mentioned, there's going to be a video package. There's going to be a national anthem. There's going to be a school song. They're going to raise the conference and national championship banners. If you're not in there 20 minutes to 15 minutes before the game, you're going to miss something because this is going to be a production. And I think I am as excited as anybody else to see the new intro. I'd be pretty shocked if it was a different song. But I think that the way that they're going to incorporate the, I think it's 8 new HD video boards in there is going to be pretty exciting. And I think everyone should probably get into the game that's going to the game.
Speaking of those video boards, Ross, everyone's seen the pictures on social media, how the NDSU broadcast staff has been pushing these and how great they're going to be. I forget how many millions of dollars that they put into these video boards, and it'll just be really nice for me anyway to see just a great, great video board in a very nice stadium.
I'd have to check on that. I think the number was like 7.2, but I'd have to confirm that. It's certainly an update that the stadium needed. I mean, it was unique, certainly, when Daktronics brought those corner video boards into the Fargo Dome, because the way the Fargo Dome's structured, the way that those giant columns in each corner are structured, they were great supports for these video boards, but they were squares like a standard TV would have been. You know, everything's moved to widescreen now. Well, these were almost exactly square. They weren't HD, and it's tough to see, you know, on replay, really whether something wasn't a catch, whether something wasn't in or out of bounds, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think Bison fans are going to have that problem anymore. But I think $7.2 million is what actually ended up being spent. And obviously, you know, this is a city-owned facility. They'll use those video boards for all the other events that go on in the Fargo Dome as well. So it's not just Bison football, but it certainly is an upgrade to NDSU's facility and something that's going to help in recruiting. I mean, you know that.
Absolutely. Facilities. Every 17- and 18-year-old kid wants to see the shiniest new thing in the room, and I can tell you that the better facilities you have, the more attention you're going to draw, especially since you've won 5 straight national championships. Put that together with some pretty darn good facilities, you're going to be recruiting at a very high level. But let's get into Charleston Southern, Ross. I can tell you that this is a 10-win team from last year. It's no pushover, obviously a quarterfinal team. What can you tell us about Charleston Southern? What do fans need to know?
Yeah, I think it's kind of wild. I think last year, too, though, NDSU sort of assumed that they were going to go in and kind of stomp Montana, or at least Bison fans assumed that. And you can't help but sort of get the same feeling with this Charleston Southern game. It's another top 10 matchup. This is a good team. They run a unique offense, and they finished in the quarterfinals a season ago. They bring back a lot of players, including, I think Craig Haley told me, 3 senior tailbacks, and that's pretty deep. And with how they run the ball, I guess tailbacks really isn't the right way to describe any other players, but this is a team that can run the ball. This is a team that can score, and it's a team that's playoff tested, and I think probably ready to put up more of a fight than maybe Bison fans are ready for or anticipating. Maybe.
Well, let's see, obviously. I believe, Ross, you told me this morning the spread was 18.5 for this opening game, so it's not like Vegas thinks this is going to be awfully close. But I know that this Charleston Southern team is a little bit unique, Ross, I'd say, on both sides of the ball. Would you care to go into that a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, we can deep dive into it, but just they run a kind of a triple option, or certainly option offense. More difficult to describe. When I spoke to Kleiman, he called it kind of a blend of Wofford and Georgia Southern, if you can sort of think about that, and definitely not the way that Sam Houston does it out of the shotgun. And then on defense, they just do a lot of stuff. They line up normally in a 3-4. They use an under front. They use an over front. They use what Kleiman calls a double eagle front, where they have three down linemen that go head up on both guards and the center. They're just going to do a lot of different things to try and confuse this NDSU offensive line that, with the Kuhnert suspension, is going to be a little bit less experienced, I guess. And so they're going to do a lot of strange things on offense, and they're going to do a lot of strange things on defense.
Absolutely. So let's get into things. When NDSU is the offense that's out of the ball, as you just said, there's going to be a lot of different fronts being thrown at this offensive line, at this offense, at Easton Stick as a whole. How do you think that this NDSU offense has been game planning for this, and how ready do you think they're going to be?
Well, I was able to see a little bit in practice, and they are using they're even using defensive backs as just the athletes to, you know, run that option and keep the, you know, defensive ends, outside linebackers, safeties, and corners ready to defend that option. Even against an option attack, your middle linebacker and your defensive tackles have pretty similar responsibilities as they would against a zone blocking scheme, similar responsibilities as they would against a power pole blocking team. They just have their gaps, but the ends and the outside linebackers, the safeties and the corners, they have specific responsibilities on the option that they need to be ready for. And that's kind of how things have to go. As far as the offensive line, you know, they have to be ready to communicate, because it's going to be very rare that Charleston Southern lines up the same way on defense, even one play to the next. They've got under calls, they've got over calls, they've got base calls, and they're not going to have Austin Kuhnert in there making calls. They're going to have to understand protections. They're going to have to understand run blocking schemes right away.
And so, as you just mentioned, I mean, how do you think that Tanner Volson getting the start, Colin Connor getting his first start of the season at left tackle, there's a lot of pressure on him trying to replace everything that NDSU's had at left tackle. With all these different fronts, how are you expecting this offensive line and Tanner and Colin, specifically, how do you think that they're going to adjust?
Well, I'm a little bit less worried about Colin Connor than I am about Tanner Volson. Not necessarily because I think Colin Connor's a better or worse player. I just think that, you're going to probably have a 3-to-1, if not a 4-to-1, run-pass ratio. And you're at left tackle, your responsibilities on a run play are, you know, usually pretty similar. Play in, play out, et cetera, et cetera. And also, Colin Connor, well, I guess so does Tanner Volson, but Colin Connor has Zach Johnson there to help him. So obviously does Volson, but Volson has responsibilities as far as making protection calls and making making all the calls for the offensive line. That's the center's job. And so because Volson has that responsibility, and when Zach Ziemer comes in, Zach Ziemer will have that responsibility, that's a much more difficult situation to get thrown into. Left tackle, you kind of know what you're doing in both pass and run, and it'll be more of a question for Connor of athletic ability and strength, whereas Volson has to be athletic enough, strong enough, and smart enough to make the calls, smart enough to keep this Bison offensive line moving as one.
Talked about on Tuesday, Ross, but just about the entire season, about how many times is Easton Stick actually going to have to throw the ball? And that's going to come to fruition here 2 days from now. I'm putting the over-under at 20 for the number of times that Easton's going to have to throw the ball against Charleston Southern. Do you think that's too high? Is that too low? Or how many times do you think that Easton is going to have to throw the ball against this Charleston Southern defense?
I kind of like the number 20 because I think NDSU is going to try and run 65 plays. And if you run it 45 and throw it 20, that's at least enough to keep the defense honest, but at the same time establishing that running game, getting those four backs at least 5 or 6 touches a piece. I mean, I know the math doesn't work out, but King Frazier's gonna run the ball more than 12 times. I mean, that's just kind of how it is. So you look at his majority of the carries, and then you try and find ways to get Bruce carries and get Lance carries, Chase, et cetera, et cetera. And I think some of those throws are obviously be to Chase. Some of those runs are going to be options with Easton as well. I mean, his ability as an athlete, he has to keep the backside honest for Charleston Southern's defense, so that when they are running those strong side powers, that the defensive ends aren't just crashing, or I guess they'd be outside linebackers in this case. But if he catches somebody on the backside crashing, Easton Stick can go for 60 yards in a blink of an eye.
Another question I have for you about this Charleston Southern defense is, how concerned should I actually be? Again, this is a Charleston Southern team that gave up 58 points to Jacksonville State last year in the quarterfinals. I mean, obviously Jacksonville State put up a ton of points on everyone, but I just, you know, a non-Missouri Valley team coming into the Fargo Dome to start the season. I know that you had some splits last year about non-Missouri Valley teams coming into the Fargo Dome in the playoffs, but I don't feel too concerned about this Charleston Southern defense as a whole. Should I be?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that's kind of the point of what we're talking about here is that this is probably not going to be a competitive game as much as, you know, that might be punching karma in the face or what have you. This is going to be a playoff atmosphere, and non-conference playoff opponents lose to the Bison by an average of 25 points. Non-conference opponents in the Fargo Dome as a whole have a much worse average than that. And this is a defense that, while it might be complicated, it also might not be good. To give up 58 points to a Jacksonville State team that NDSU basically shut down in the finals just tells me that it's not, potentially not a quality unit, and certainly not a unit that's ready for an 8-man rotation on the Bison offensive line, just grinding a 3-man defensive line front to a pulp as 4 super talented running backs just demoralize their defense. And that sounds like a lot of fire and brimstone, but when you watch film on Charleston Southern, this is not a team that is big enough or really athletic enough for what's coming to them.
Two players I will highlight here on the Charleston Southern defense is a linebacker by the name of Solomon Brown, someone who is second on the team in total tackles, and he had double-digit tackles for loss. But the real guy I'm a little bit leery about, Ross, is Anthony Ellis. He's going to be a junior defensive lineman, someone who had 18 tackles for loss last year, led the team in sacks as well with 7.5. Any concern here between Solomon Brown and Anthony Ellis?
Well, Solomon Brown is a guy who's going to be trying to keep clean all day long. They're going to try and keep blockers off of him so that he can make, you know, 1-yard gain, 2-yard gain, 3-yard gain plays in the run defense game. Anthony Ellis is kind of a poor man's Greg Menard. He's even smaller than Greg Menard. They'll use him as an edge rusher. They'll use him as an interior rusher. Anthony Ellis is a guy whose talent level is kind of beyond that of the rest of his defense. So they're going to move him around and try and use him all over the place because he is a very good player, and they're going to need to bring him from all over to try and confuse this young-ish Bison offensive line. But as long as NDSU can stay ahead in this game and stay, you know, kind of in on schedule, I guess would be the best way of putting it. If they can stay on schedule and stay running the football, I think that Ellis becomes less of a problem because he is somewhat undersized and only about 6'1", 255. They can neutralize him by running the ball at him as opposed to ending up in passing situations where Colin Connor's having to block him one-on-one.
All right, let's flip to when NDSU's on defense or when Charleston Southern has the ball. My first question to you, Ross, would be, is this young secondary really going to matter against, as you said, an option team like this? They're probably not going to be throwing the ball a ton. So is this young secondary potentially going to be an issue as they're trying to break in some new guys?
Well, considering he knows a lot more about football than I do, it's probably a good thing that I have to agree with Coach Kleiman on this matter. He is more worried about this than he would be about a pro-style team because you've got a young secondary that is going to be thinking run on every play. And because they're thinking run on every play, and because honestly they're probably being optioned at quite a bit, you know, they're trying to get the edge, on a lot of what Charleston Southern does. It's very possible that on those however many throws a game that Charleston Southern runs, they're going to get caught sleeping. And you got get caught sleeping once, that can be a 60-yard touchdown. So that's why Kleiman has his level of concern about, obviously about Jalen Wimbush, but also, you know, Jalen Allison's not old. Robbie Grimsley's not old either. These guys can make mistakes. They're really good athletes, but to have this young secondary in a position where they're thinking run on every play is a little bit dangerous. So I agree with Kleiman on that, and I think that their youth is going to matter. And what I originally thought was going to be kind of a break for these guys and a chance for them to sort of ease into the process, now I understand where it's maybe not a chance for them to ease into the process.
Here's another one for you, Russ. How many tackles is Nick DeLuca going to have? We'll put the over-under at 13.5. What do you think that this senior linebacker can do in his first game of his senior season?
Well, that's going to be one of the fun things to watch, because if this really is like a Wofford offense. Now, Wofford had fullback Eric Breitelstein, who was an All-American player, and they gave him the ball a lot. I'm not convinced that Charleston Southern is going to run the fullback quite as much on that first read as Wofford did, but that was the game that Grant Olson set the NDSU record with 27 tackles. I think you might potentially see a 20-tackle game from DeLuca. I know that sounds like a lot, but that's what I'm looking for, is to see if DeLuca can make it to 20 tackles, to see how much they test him inside. But it's not like, you know, the only way he's going to get a tackle is if they hand it off to the fullback. He has the range to make plays from sideline to sideline. And if the outside linebackers are doing their job and taking away the pitch man, he's going to be hammering away at the quarterback all day long.
And people thought we weren't going to have a little bit of a flaming hot take there. 20 tackles is a hell of a game. So I hope to see that in my first game up there at the Fargo Dome. Last question for you here, Ross. Do you think that this NDSU defense can get enough stops here early to really kind of put things away, make Charleston Southern throw the ball at something that they're not really accustomed to? They only averaged about 20 times a game throwing the ball last fall. I mean, do you think that this is a game where they can get it to be, say, 17-7, 20-3, you know, heading into the latter half of the second quarter to really put Charleston Southern on their heels? Or how are you anticipating the game flow going?
See, I think that's a great question. I think that this game, as odd as it sounds, I think this game's going to be about 20 minutes long. If NDSU can get the stops, I really don't think, as arrogant as it might sound, I'm not convinced Charleston Southern's defense is ready for what's coming to them, regardless of whether Austin Kuhnert's playing or not. I think that NDSU is going to score probably on three of their first four drives. And if the defense can get two or three stops, if they can get up by 10, if they can get up by 13, if they can get up by 17, that will end the game, because then Charleston Southern has to throw. Then Greg Menard's got his ears pinned back. Then they really have a problem because they don't have a lot of true passing sets in that offense. They might throw the ball 20 times a game, but they're not ready to just drop back. There's not a whole lot of single back stuff in that offense. There's not a lot of shotgun stuff in that offense. They're not ready to sling the ball around the yard. And when you get down 17 points, that's how you come back, is slinging the ball around the yard. So that's my main concern if I'm a Charleston Southern fan, is the offense needs to keep pace with NDSU. And that's a tall, tall order considering how deep and how good this Bison front seven is. Ryan, you mentioned earlier I had a chance to sit down and talk to Craig Haley of Stats FCS, one of the top FCS content producers in all of the United States, a guy that has been covering this division since he grew up a Princeton Tigers fan, and we got a chance to talk about the Charleston Southern game. We got a chance to talk about the phenomenon that is NDSU football, the increased coverage of the division since this dynasty has started, and a host of other things. So we're going to play that interview with myself and Craig Haley right now. I'm here with Craig Haley of Stats. Craig, how's it going this morning?
Doing real well, Ross. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we're very, very happy to have you. Appreciate your time, of course. So for those of our listeners that aren't familiar with your work, and I'm sure that's a pretty small number considering how long you've been providing coverage on the FCS, describe Stats and kind of your role with Stats for our listeners.
Sure. We're at FCS Football Stats LLC. We cover the FCS extensively. We have the Top 25 Media Poll. We have the National Postseason Awards, Offense and Defensive Player, Coach of the Year, a Freshman of the Year, a Scholar Athlete of the Year. We've been doing this for 30 years. Stats purchased the Sports Network, which has been covering FCS since the 80s. When a lot of national outlets weren't really focusing on what was in 1AA football. But yes, Stats continue the coverage, and you know, we're sort of a daily source, if you will.
So that kind of answers my second question. How did you become to specialize in the coverage of FCS? Did you attend an FCS university? How did you get kind of into that?
Well, I live in Jersey, and I grew up on Princeton football, going to the Ivy League, and I was a rabid fan. Maybe not as much as the Bison fans in North Dakota State, but I've been going to FCS games my whole life, and then I've always been a sports writer. I've been in the business almost 30 years. I have a background, but prior to the Sports Network and Stats, I became a beat writer for Princeton University for 11 years at a newspaper, and I've done work for Athlon Sports covering the FCS, so I just have a long time background in it.
Cool. That's very interesting in how you got your start. It's always kind of interesting to see how guys got roped into this FCS circus that we're all sort of a part of. Speaking of a circus, how have you seen the coverage of the FCS kind of grow since the beginning of this NDSU phenomenon?
Well, I think it's at its all-time height. I'm always telling people that, the interest level. When you have a dynasty like North Dakota State, you're talking 5 years, people are drawn to it, whether you're rooting for or against, and you know, it's easy to pick sides. You always want to take down the top dog if you're not an NDSU fan, but it draws attention. It's sort of the Yankees of college football. At the same time, with Carson Wentz being the second pick of the draft, I mean, that's just, you know, an extensive amount of coverage and publicity for the FCS. So I do think it's at its all-time height. You have all the postseason games, you know, nationally televised in one form or the other. You have so many conferences now with digital networks televising games. I mean, it's just incredible what it become, and the interest, and you know, the interest for the next level, where people are always looking for that next Carson Wentz with the NFL draft. So, yeah, if you're playing good football, they're going to find you.
Yeah, I was actually just at one of the preliminary practices for North Dakota State, and just happened to bump into a Miami Dolphins scout. Seems like that's sort of the common occurrence now. So, you're certainly right on that end. Could you give us some thoughts on this year's version of the Bison, at least from a more national perspective? I seem to be kind of ingrained in it and see it every day. So from a higher level overview.
I do think the Bison are a favorite, and everybody thinks that way. But this year is very legitimate, especially because Easton Stick getting those eight games, those eight starts and eight wins. You know, you're not coming back and starting over at that position at quarterback. And to have, you know, to be surrounded with such talent, obviously they're going to run the ball, you know, through people with that core of running backs and you know, an offensive line that nobody's been able to stop, especially outside the conference. You know, defense just reloads. Obviously you're replacing two senior cornerbacks. That, you know, that's a concern. But when you have such a great front seven, I think they're the team to beat. Now when I say that, hey, in a one-game situation, everybody's beatable. You know, all you have to do is you sort of have to go in and challenge the champion and show them early on that, you know, you can win. It happened, and it also, you know, they haven't left the Fargo Dome in the playoffs, and if they have to, you know, maybe it's a different story. But, no, they're the team to beat. They've separated themselves from that next tier.
So what can you tell us I think I watched two playoff games. Other than that, not a whole lot on Charleston Southern. I think you would definitely have me beat as far as general knowledge of Charleston Southern and kind of how they go about doing things. What can you tell us about CSU?
Sure. Ross, I mean, they're a very sound team. They deserve to be top 10, you know, coming off an undefeated year in the Big South, especially when you know, Coastal Carolina was there returning with a veteran squad to go out and win that conference. They're going to have a similar formula as NDSU. Whether they can do it as well, I don't know. They run a read option. Kyle Copeland's played a decent amount in last year, but at the same time, he wasn't their main starter. He's going to run the read option at quarterback. Have three senior tailbacks. That's tremendous depth at that position. Darius Hammond, Ben Robinson, Mike Holloway are the seniors. I mean, I think in this game, maybe that shows a little bit in the second half when everybody's sort of getting their sea legs and you know, the first game and you know, maybe a little exhausted. They're going to have three different running backs. Obviously, NDSU will as well. But I think that helps them. They play good defense. They were an exceptional defense last year. They did lose five starters from the defense. I mean, the ones to watch there are Anthony Ellis, defensive end, very good pass rusher. They had a young linebacker last year, Solomon Brown, who stepped up, was freshman in the year in the Big South. He'll take that next step. You know, in the secondary, you know, they did lose a little bit, so, you know, maybe Easton Stick can take advantage there, but it's a very good team. They have a very rough schedule to start the year, 4 out of 5 on the road, including Florida State. I don't know which one's tougher with the Bison or Florida State on the road, but yeah, they're a quality team. They just probably a little bit in over their head trying to take on NDSU at the Fargo Dome.
You mentioned him briefly. Just how good is Anthony Ellison, and how do they use him? I know Coach Kleiman at his Monday press conference made mention of multiple fronts, and they like to do a lot of different things on defense. What can you tell us about Anthony Ellis?
Well, yes, they'll move around. You know, he could come from the outside. He could come from coming across the middle. He's not a huge defensive end. You know, he's not going to be one who's going to scare you when you look at his size. But at the same time, he's very, very effective. You know, he can get around people with the right maneuvers, the right speed. Yeah, he's certainly one to fear. I do find that these teams at a conference that take on NDSU are always thrown for a bit when they see the size and what the NDSU offensive line can do. That's been, you know, such a big part of their run here, what they do teams at a conference by running the ball and just handling people at the line of scrimmage.
We talked about that a lot last year on the podcast in the playoff run, and I just had come up with a few statistics about how an out-of-conference teams do their first time in the Fargo Dome, and you're absolutely right. It's a scary proposal to come in and see this team for the first time in that atmosphere. It's very difficult. Is there another FCS team that you'd compare Charleston Southern's offense to, and how was that battle with NDSU's 100% return? Well, not 100%. I guess they did lose Brian Schatz, but they have six of their front seven returning. How's that going to go, that battle?
Well, I do think, as Coach Kleiman mentioned at his Monday press conference, I mean, you know, they have experience against Georgia Southern, obviously the coaching staff, not all the players, with an option. It's run a little differently. Yes, as he pointed out, that they can pass the ball a little bit more, you know, 20 times a game as opposed to, you know, 5 or 6. So that is a big key here because, you know, you can't over-pursue thinking run. I mean, Kyle Copeland does come back with some experience that, yeah, he'll be able to look downfield a little bit, you know, mix in some pass with that read option. You have to play discipline, you know, when you're facing a team like this, knowing that, you know, it might not be the first runner. You have to be in your spot to look for the next guy.
So last but not least, I'm going to ask for your game prediction, and then you mentioned that North Dakota State was the favorite. Kind of a season prediction. Who you think maybe NDSU will face in Frisco?
Well, I guess in this game, I'll go, you know, maybe 34-17. I think the second half, North Dakota State, you know, starts to you know, assert itself and you know, make sure that they come out on top. I think, you know, there's a handful of teams, Sam Houston, you know, Jacksonville State, Northern Iowa, obviously, out of the Missouri Valley. But Richmond comes back with 8 starters on each side of the ball. I think those are the main ones. You know, Chattanooga, maybe if they can answer their, you know, with a quarterback. But I think the first 4 I mentioned are the ones. I'm probably leaning towards Sam Houston. I know they've been beaten up by the Bison in the playoffs. But, you know, at the same time, they return a lot. They have a veteran team, you know, veteran quarterback. Casey Keeler, you know, certainly has, you know, knows what to do with at that time of the year. So I would make them the second team. You know, Northern Iowa, you know, maybe they lost a little too much on defense. I love how they stand right up to the bottom, though, and give it their best. So you can't discount them. It's a great year in the Missouri Valley. It's a great year in the CAA football. But if I had to pick one team right now, I'd say Sam Houston. Jacksonville State did reload with some transfers, so, you know, I'm not discounting them as well.
Craig, thanks so much for your time, and thanks for coming on the Bison Report.
Really appreciate it, Ross.
And Ryan and I would, of course, like to thank Craig one more time for gracing us with his presence here on the Bison Report Radio
Absolutely.
Podcast.
And with that, that's going to conclude the episode for today, the 3rd episode in 6 days, I believe, here on the BisonReport.com radio podcast. So 48 hours away till kickoff, folks. It's here, football season. 48 hours from now, you'll be in the tailgate lots having a great time with a couple of cold beverages and hopefully each one of your hands. So for Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for all the time and attention you guys have given to us this week. And with that, we'll see you guys on Saturday. Go Bison.